Seem to be reading from John's Gospel a lot, and so today we read also from chapter 15. Jesus says, "No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. I have called you friends, for all that I've heard from my Father I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you, that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. This I command you, to love one another." To love one another, a commandment set into the context of a discussion about friendship. There are three words in the Greek language that describe love: the most accessible, the most enduring, the most powerful is the word Jesus uses in this text, philia, meaning friendship. Now that's not the one that Hallmark is marketing this week. Neither is it the one of which we have virtually no knowledge, except through the one who was able to make it work, agape. But I'll talk about that in a minute. I want to talk this morning about friendship as the type of love in community that keeps us strong. It's the way our kids celebrate Valentine's Day. You know, if you're in third grade and you bring Valentine's for your class, you bring one to everyone. Everyone's included. Everyone that day is the type of friend who receives a greeting. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about what I think and what I've learned and what I've experienced about what friendship is and what friends are. And I've learned it in some rather odd places. I've learned, for example, that friends are always fair. Friends are always fair, which seems something of a paradox, because one of the principles of friendship is that we get to treat our friends unfairly. We get to lean on them beyond what we would expect, that they will do more for us than is necessary. But so also will we for them. That's how it works. Friends are always fair. I've gotten to be very close friends with my brother-in-law over the years. You know Scott, the one who's pranking me all the time and who we ring each other's cell phones every chance we get when we know they're in a position where the ringing of a cell phone will cause them embarrassment. That's what we do. And when we're together, we usually go to breakfast or get lunch. And we have finally decided over the years that, you know what, we're just going to go Dutch. Because who can remember whose turn it is? And we don't want to be unfair, although it is kind of fun to prank each other a little bit by getting to the waitstaff early and giving them the credit card and paying ahead. But friends are always fair. We know what the score is. And because we care, we keep the score straight. I don't advertise this in the presbytery, but I play poker in a poker club. It's the longest standing poker club on the Texas Tech campus. It was originated in the 30s. It's referred to as the Chaucer Society, because in the 30s, we didn't have poker clubs. We had academic study groups. And of course, the Chaucer Society started with a group of faculty from the English department, as it were. Well, anyway, we play nickel dime quarter stakes, and that's the same stakes as have been true since the 30s. And we had poker night a couple weeks ago, and it always happens at some point. Somebody will get a good hand and bid the maximum, which is 25 cents, and three guys will drop out. Because we won't throw a quarter in there. And the insight from the last time that happened came from one of my poker buddies who said, you know, he just sort of stopped the game when that happened, because he had bid the quarter and wanted everybody else to stay in, and nobody did. He said, there's not a man in this room that wouldn't give any one of us $100 if we asked. But you won't throw a quarter in to stay in the game. And here's what else we won't do. Guys with arthritic hands and fingers that deal in ways that sometimes reveal the card that's being dealt, we see a card that we know somebody else has, we'll drop out. If a card gets flipped or we get an extra one, we drop out, because friends are always fair. Because we know if the chips were down and we were actually out, These are the people we'd call friends. Friends are a blessing. Silly old guys with whom we play poker. Well, they keep us strong. They make it work. Friends are always fair. Friends are always there, too. Doesn't that sound like a Hallmark card? Well, they're always there, except they're not really. I mean, we don't spend all of our time with the people we would call our friends. I've got a very close friend that I see once every other year, if that. And yet I never forget every time I deliver a lecture to my introductory sociology class about Karl Marx, about all those times in grad school that we talked about the subtleties and the nuances of Marxist thought. And I mostly know what I know about that particular theoretical frame in sociology from having spent a great deal of time in grad school in a study group with my friend. And my students, of course, don't know all that, but I know every time I give a particular lecture or make a particular point that my old pal Gregor's in my mind. And I expect he knows that too. And do we not have people that we haven't seen since college? Of course, that's why we have reunions. That we haven't seen since we were children, or that we, in fact, will never see again. We've lost them. But they never go away. They're always there in the conversations that we can replay, the insights that we've shared, and the strength we draw from having been in their company and remaining so. Of course, the internet now and webcams and so forth enable us to stay in touch in different ways. But it's also true that everyone that's ever been a part of our lives, that we've ever encountered in ways that illustrated for us or created for us the bonds of friendship, we never lose them. They never go away. Friends are always there. Friends are always fair. Friends are always there. Friends will help us dare to go beyond where we thought we could go, to find more in ourselves than we thought we had in us. I got a pal, he's the statistician on my research team. If you want to know who your friends are, find out who will actually run a dozen regression models for you. That's part of why he's my friend. He also, about 4 or 5 years ago, said, "You ever hear of Lubbock Senior Softball? He calls it the Geezer League." I hadn't played softball in 20 plus years and had refrained from doing so largely for self-preservation. But I'm old enough to play in the Geezer League now, and by golly, that's what I do. He dared me to get back into it. We had our first practice yesterday. And so it goes. I can't wait. It's one of those things that characterizes my year that I can no longer imagine being without. And the coolest part about the Geezer League is that there's one position that a guy can play no matter how old he is. Because of the rules of the Geezer League, there's no collisions allowed at home plate. Because we have two of them. It's a long story, but never mind. The point is that the oldest, most decrepit guy on your team can always play the catcher. I intend to play until I'm 90. Because my friend told me what's possible, dared me to go beyond what I thought I could do. Well, that's just a metaphor for the essence of friendship, truly. We find ourselves in situations we're not sure where to go next. And a friend will say, not only, "I dare you," but, "I'll go with you." We find ourselves in situations we don't think we can get through. And a friend will say, "I dare you to come forward, to step forward again and move back in. Move back into the life that's been thrown up for grabs for who knows whatever reason." Friends will help you dare to keep on keeping on. And we're lucky to have them. They're always fair, in a poker game or anywhere else. They're always there, even if only inside our own heads. And they move us forward on a dare. It's no accident that on the list of most people's favorite hymns is "What a Friend We Have in Jesus," with whom we can always converse in a prayer, who's shown us the power of living in the company of others, and who also takes it even one step further, beyond our experience or even what's possible with us. The setup for that phrase in John's Gospel, chapter 15, "I've called you friends." Right ahead of that, Jesus says, "Greater love hath no one than this, that they lay down their lives for their friends." That's the form of love which the Greeks call agape, which he's done for us, which is beyond fair, to a point where we could only begin to imagine what it must have cost him to do that, and how much love there was in his heart and in God's creative being for him to lay down his life for us. Just as there's not a man around that poker table that wouldn't give someone $100 if they needed it. There's not a person in this room that would not, if asked, bear pain on behalf of someone else in this room. Well, that's just the tiniest hint of what God has agreed to do for us, not just to bear our pain, but to bear the burden of all of our sin collectively and individually. What a friend we have in Jesus. It's a week to celebrate the power, the value, and ultimately the peace that comes from friendship. And I'm grateful. Amen. And may the peace of God, which goes beyond what we can understand, but that we can begin to experience and feel, keep us strong in the company of others. Amen.